We look back at the news of the year, including the race for governor, movement on the same-sex marriage question in Wisconsin, and lots more. Noah Ovshinsky is our regular news guy here on Central Time. Officially, he goes by assistant news director at WPR. He stopped by earlier this week to talk with Rob Ferret about the year in Wisconsin news.
Noah, welcome back and happy almost end of the year to you.
Happy almost end of the year right back to you, Rob. It's good to be here.
Where did the time go?
I don't know, but I do know it had 2014 was a crazy year in the news business here in Wisconsin.
A lot happened, and it maybe because of that, that's why it felt like this year flew by so quickly. Well, one story that we've been watching here for years. This goes back before 2014. Act 10, this saga, the budget repair bill from years ago, changes to collective bargaining for public employees. Wrapped up in many ways this year.
Yeah, put to bed officially. At least the legal fight over Act 10 officially came to an end this year. In July, the state Supreme Court declared it constitutional.
And there were a lot of different court challenges to the whole thing, to bits and pieces of it. They've all pretty much petered out now? Still floating?
I don't know. I mean, the legal fight over Act 10 is essentially over. Mm. I think the question now is, is there going to be new legislation in 2015 dealing with unions?
Yeah. What have we heard so far? I mean, the session hasn't even started yet.
Right.
But there's talk. There's already talk.
There is talk. And probably the next battle in the fight over the – we'll call it the role of unions in the state. And it will likely come in the form of a renewed effort to pass right-to-work legislation. The governor says it's not on his agenda, but he also hasn't said what he would do if the legislature put it on his desk. And, of course, the caucus in both the Assembly and the Senate is a bit more conservative than it was previously. And so I think there's a chance that we may see right-to-work at least considered seriously by the legislature.
And now right-to-work, that's the name supporters usually give to it, and it's kind of become a catcher's. What is it in a nutshell?
It can come in a few different forms, but essentially it prohibits a business from, mandating the collection of union dues as a condition of employment. And this is primarily we're talking about unions in the private sector.
Mm-hmm. So if I go to a workplace that is a union shop under right to work, I could say, yeah, I'll take the job. But I'm not going to be part of the union. I can't be compelled to be part under right-to-work laws.
Exactly.
Okay, well, another biggie. And this one – so this was a year of the courts in many ways.
Yes, it was. You'll be hearing a lot about the courts and lawyers in the next few minutes.
Right. And there's a year of elections too, and they came together in the ongoing voter ID saga.
Right. So we saw a lot of this issue this year. Obviously, it was a big election year as far as the governor's race is concerned. And so a lot of people were paying attention as to whether or not it was going to be in place in time for the November election. And just going back in time briefly, this was something that was in place for, I think, one election in 2012, and then almost immediately entered legal limbo and has been in that limbo, since 2012. The Wisconsin Supreme Court this year upheld the voter ID law. And it eventually ran into trouble in the federal courts.
Yeah, and we were seeing this on a lot of stories. There's the progression through the state court system and the federal court system. Now, what happened this year in the federal courts when it comes to Wisconsin's voter ID?
Right. So it's been resolved on the state side. On the federal side, an appeals court in Chicago upheld the voter ID law. Judge Frank Easterbrook, who wrote the opinion, basically said not having a photo ID was a matter of choice.
Right. So all of a sudden they make this ruling.
Yes.
Voter ID's on.
Yes. Voter ID. We're talking about just a matter of weeks before the election.
We're going to have it. We talked to, Kevin Kennedy with the Government Accountability Board, how they're going to get this thing into place.
Yes.
And then.
And then the U.S. Supreme Court steps in and suspends its implementation just before the November election.
Yeah. And so why?
Well, no rationale was given, at least by the majority in the court. In the past, the high court has been, I guess I'll call it hesitant, to allow changes in election law so close to an actual election. They want to minimize the chaos associated with that kind of thing. Of course, we don't know exactly why they did it, but that's something that has been at issue in the past.
But that decision affected the November election. That did not strike down voter ID in the future.
No, it did not. It just meant that voter ID was not going to be in effect for this last election.
So It seems, if that's the case, then voter ID legal challenges may have run their course unless somebody somehow gets the U.S. Supreme Court to take up the validity of the law.
Exactly. And this is something the Supreme Court has dealt with previously. I mean, they have upheld voter ID laws in the past. Mm. And so I think, voter ID certainly, I would think, has a future here in Wisconsin. I think it's a matter of timing at this point.
Yeah, and that appeals court you mentioned cited that past Supreme Court decision and saying, hey, there's no reason to overturn this local federal judge. Don't overturn the Supreme Court here.
Exactly.
Okay, well, still maybe – we may still be talking about this next year, or we may just be showing voter ID at the polling stations next year.
Yeah, I think it's a good chance that that'll be the case.
All right. Well, let's complete our court trifecta here with – and this is a huge national issue too. We're seeing state by state having same-sex marriage bans struck down. Mm-hmm. Catch us up on Wisconsin this year.
Right. So, let's go back in time. A judge here in Wisconsin struck down the law prohibiting same-sex marriage in Wisconsin. The U.S. Supreme Court earlier this year refused to hear cases from five states, including mm-hmm. Wisconsin. And that act of refusing to hear those cases officially made gay marriage legal in the state of Wisconsin.
So in this case, it was a U.S. Supreme Court non-decision
exactly.
that had a
right.
big effect.
They declined to take up the opposition's a case, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So there was kind of like voter ID initially with that ruling here in the state from a federal judge. There was a stop and or a go and stop sort of thing. People were briefly getting marriage licenses. That was put on hold
exactly.
until the Supreme Court weighed in or, as fates had it, didn't.
I mean, there were legal dramas. Mm-hmm. I mean, consequential legal dramas playing out in almost every level of courts, both here in Wisconsin and in the federal courts. I mean, it really – 2014 was an amazing year for mm-hmm. for the courts.
Yeah. So current state of affairs, same-sex marriage, legal.
Legal.
The constitutional amendment banning it is
– unconstitutional. I will say that the conservative organization that really pushed for that referendum, mm-hmm. the constitutional amendment rather, Wisconsin Family Action, the officials with that group say they will continue this fight and that it's not over.
Hmm. Unless, again, they can get the U.S. Supreme Court to do something. I mean, like voter ID, there's not much more up to go there.
That's it. I mean, the U.S. Supreme Court is it. And it remains to be seen if they will, revisit or how they will revisit the gay marriage issue.
We are talking to our news guy, Noah Ovshinsky, recapping, updating the top stories of 2014. Just some little stuff left coming up. But, the governor's race and some other things.
That's Rob Ferret with Noah Ovshinsky, WPR's assistant news director, talking about the big news in Wisconsin over the past year. More on that conversation coming up. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Earlier this week, our news guy Noah Ovshinsky sat down with Rob Ferret to recap the top Wisconsin stories of the year.
Okay, Noah, I teased that that story. It kind of was under the radar, not really in the headlines. This race for governor, this is something you, I know, it's a hobby of yours, these little stories.
Yeah, I heard something about a little governor's race here mm-hmm. in the state. This in fact, was a huge issue that we've talked a lot about on this show. It was an issue, of course, that the residents of Wisconsin experienced both in the press and on TV in the form of nonstop campaign mm-hmm. ads and issue ads and things of that nature. But the headline really here, the takeaway is Governor Walker survived his third election essentially in his first term. I think that's certainly for him a testament to his electability in the state.
Now, leading up to the election, a lot of the pundits who came on the show, the analysts said, people are thinking jobs and the economy in this. Is that how it actually ended up playing out in the race?
Yeah. I mean, the campaigns for the most part centered on basically who would be better for the state's economy, that is, who would create more jobs, and who would be a better steward of the state's finances. Mary Burke argued that the state wasn't doing well enough. Mm-hmm. She referred to, among other things, the governor's promise a few years ago to help create 250,000 new jobs in his first term. That, of course, did not happen. She pointed that out. The governor argued, though, that the state was headed in the right direction. It wasn't where he wanted it to be, mm-hmm. but that it was headed in the right direction and that under his continued leadership, things would continue to improve.
And what kind of, I guess, policy decisions that he made, things that he'd implemented, did he point to as to back up that argument?
Yeah, I mean, he used tax cuts, certainly, as an example, Act 10. He also talked about the tuition freeze in the UW system, used issues like those to bolster this argument that, you know, he was a good steward of taxpayer money.
All right. Well, don't keep us in suspense. How did this end?
He won.
Okay.
He did. And, you know, I think there were several interesting takeaways from the election, and you know, one of them I guess I'm a sort of a nerd when it comes to these kinds of things, but it actually, if you look at the numbers, it showed that Governor Walker really, despite the campaigns, was no more popular or unpopular than he was when he took office in 2010. That's despite everything that happened with Act 10 and the other controversies that kind of surrounded the governor in the last few years.
Okay. And what else? Any other takeaways for what helped Governor Walker win re-election?
Yeah. I think the Republican tide, you know, that swept the nation certainly helped the governor. And I think the fact, frankly, that Mary Burke was not able to get the Democratic base to buck that trend that, you know, I think haunts most midterm elections for Democrats. And that's the fact that Democrats simply don't show up in large numbers in non-presidential years. And so her campaign just was not able to get enough voters to the polls on campaign day to make a difference.
And just briefly, before the election, the Republicans controlled the Senate and the Assembly. After they controlled it by more, and you mentioned earlier a stronger, I guess, conservative majority, not just Republican, but conservative majority when all was said and done.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking at I think the 2015 legislative agenda is going to reflect a caucus that is a legislature that is more conservative. Some of the moderates, you know, who may have been more willing to cross the aisle and so forth, they've either they've retired or have just left the legislature. And the people that are being, elected to replace them are more conservative. So I think we will see a far more conservative agenda in 2015 than maybe we've even seen in the past.
And we'll get into that more next week when you'll join us to kind of forecast, preview the stories to watch in 2015.
Yeah,
and that
absolutely
is going to be one of the big ones.
Absolutely.
What they're going to be coming up with.
Yeah, no doubt.
So another story we've been following, and this one, a news still breaking as recently as this week, a police-involved shooting, Noah, in Milwaukee.
Right. So Dontre Hamilton was killed in April by a Milwaukee police officer, Christopher Manny, in a park. The officer was essentially doing a welfare check, seeing if Dontre Hamilton was okay. He tried to frisk Hamilton, who was mentally ill. Some kind of fight broke out, and it resulted in Hamilton being shot 14 times by the officer, killing him. His death led to protests since April, sporadic protests, and as you alluded to, news in that case coming this week.
Yeah, so back on Monday, a big decision on that resulted in more protests.
Right. So the district attorney in Milwaukee County, D.A. Chisholm, opted not to file charges against the officer in the case. He said that, you know, the evidence basically pointed to the fact that it was self-defense. The officer was basically operating in self-defense when he shot Hamilton.
So there has been some consequence for the officer, not in the courts, but in terms of his continued employment in Milwaukee.
Right. Manny was, in fact, actually fired by the Milwaukee Police Department, not for the shooting itself, but for breaking procedure, essentially allowing the situation to escalate the way that it did. That, of course, caused a lot of controversy, especially among those in law enforcement who felt like he shouldn't have been fired. And since, of course, April, there has been efforts to get the police better training to deal with the mentally ill to perhaps avoid situations like this.
And we heard from Mayor Barrett himself actually talking about a new program where they're going to try to get what's considered the gold standard of training for all officers, which would, I think, be a first, at least among major departments. Well, another piece of news breaking on this after that decision, something from the federal government.
Right. So on the same day that D.A. Chisholm announced that he wasn't going to file charges against the officer in the case, the Justice Department announced that it will investigate the incident for possible civil rights violations. So, again, that's something that will also play out in 2015.
And this, of course, is against a background of other shootings, other racial tensions around the country.
Right. I mean, the shooting and the protests, I mean, this came in a year and is coming in a year when you know, the relationship between the police and the public, certainly more specifically the black community, has really been under a microscope, you know, especially in light of what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, and what's continuing to happen more recently in New York City, where a man selling individual cigarettes died after he was put in a chokehold by police. So again, what's happening in Milwaukee, all of this is happening with the backdrop of what's happening nationally, which is this microscope and this attention being put on this relationship between the police, law enforcement, and the black community.
Yeah, this is one story that we will not stop talking about in 2015, I've got a feeling.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Well, one that you've been following on WPR News, very interesting story on rail traffic and oil.
Yeah, so this is one of the issues that we've talked a lot about this year, and it really has affected the state in some, I think, big ways. You know, the oil rush that's happening right now in North Dakota and Canada means there is a lot more trains carrying a lot more oil through our communities here in Wisconsin. And, you know, local officials have raised concerns about the safety of these trains in light of some recent very high-profile explosions, including one that essentially leveled a small town in Quebec earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some debate about the safety of the train cars themselves and the ability of fire departments, especially here in Wisconsin, rural fire departments, their ability to deal with an explosion should one occur.
And I think there's been reporting here about some members of our congressional delegation asking questions, at least about what you mentioned, the safety of those train cars. So that's one that's still up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, these questions are being raised by, you know, both local communities and in Congress. The other way this sort of increasing train traffic also played out in the state and also affected the residents here in Wisconsin is, you know, this oil rush also meant that other products weren't being shipped. In particular, coal and other agricultural products. And this year, utilities were actually having a hard time getting enough coal because the trains were so busy shipping the Bakken oil from, you know, the Dakotas.
So the coal-fueled power plants that a lot of communities rely on were having trouble just finding the cargo space to get the coal to them.
Exactly. And trains are a big way that happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this is a new world of energy in the United States. I mean, what's next?
Well, you know, the reality of the energy industry, I think, is that, you know, the oil is going to flow.
The oil must flow.
The oil
must
flow.
Dune.
Exactly.
Yeah, or paraphrase it, yeah.
I mean, it's going to flow. And, you know, as the country, as our political leaders, you know, continue to debate the Keystone Pipeline and other pipeline projects, infrastructure projects, you know, while all that's happening, the railroads have really picked up the slack or are trying to pick up the slack. And the question moving forward is, you know, how and frankly, when are the railroads going to be able to build this capacity to deal with this oil while at the same time improving safety, which people would like them to do? So I think this is certainly an issue that is, again, going to continue to play out as we look at 2015.
Well, one story that's going to be finished for better or worse in the next couple of weeks, another playoff run for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, exactly. They've got their last game here of the regular season coming up on Sunday against the Detroit Lions. And of course, they're both going for the NFC number one spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Lions, their defense is tough. It's going to be a tough game, I think. It is a consequential game. But the Packers, you know, I think most people would argue, with the exception of one or two games,
right,
have really been in top form. Aaron Rodgers has performed. Eddie Lacy has, like, brought back the
running game, which has been missing for the Packers.
Yeah. I mean, he's single-handedly.
The defense has shown up from time to time.
The defense has showed up. We certainly saw that in the last game against the Buccaneers.
That was WPR's Assistant News Director Noah Ovshinsky recapping the year that was in state news. A little bit of Packers thrown in there, and he had that conversation earlier this week with Rob Ferret.